In this episode of the Smart City Podcast, I interviewed the director of Harvest Digital Planning, Brian Ashton. Brian is passionate about creating and also about geospatial technology, and he combines these two things together to help government to better engage with the community. Brian and I discuss many things, mainly focused around using digital and spatial technology to better engage and integrate across all disciplines, government, and community. Brian has some really big and great ideas in this space, some of which include breaking down data silos for better integration, data knowledge grab for planning, testing smart tech in real places, and thick data to bring social meaning to big data. As always, I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
It's the Smart City Podcast, whoa, with Smart City experts, here we go. Connecting smart technology, both big and small. Smart cities are making life better for all. Big data, emerging trends, self-driving cars and more. The Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Brian. How are you this evening?
Good, Zoe. How are you?
I'm very well. Let's jump straight in. And can you tell us a little bit about your background and what you are passionate about?
Sure. So I suppose my background is I studied computer systems engineering and business at RMIT. Sort of that was in the early 2000s. And I suppose like a lot of people who sort of finished their course, I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do kind of with my life. I end up taking a position at a company called KPMG, like a financial services company. And I joined their IT sort of advisory practice. And at the time, I thought that'll be interesting. You know, I'll get to work with a whole range of different sort of clients and work on different projects and sort of get to blend sort of this technical and business degree that I sort of earned. But after a couple of years kind of working there, sort of found like it didn't quite fit what I wanted to do with my life. Sort of felt like I wanted to do something a little bit more creative and sort of build things and do different things. And I suppose, like I said, one of the benefits was working with KPMG. I got to see lots of stuff. And one of the sort of, I suppose, IT systems that I came across there was GIS, so the Geographic Information Systems. The more sort of I read about that stuff, I thought that sounds really, really cool. The idea that it can sort of take all this data and create digital maps and combine that with remote sensing data and GPS. And I thought that's kind of what I wanted to do next, like very visual and technical. And so I decided to kind of go back to uni and do a master's in geospatial information. And yeah, that was sort of a seminal moment for me. Like it was kind of opened up my eyes to this kind of whole new world of geography, which, you know, I'd always had an interest in, but like didn't really understand kind of the academia side of it, so like human geography and all the sort of social science stuff. Yeah, that whole course was amazing, and going back and doing it as kind of a mature age student was, I think, really beneficial, sort of to really focusing on all the things I kind of liked and picked my subjects. But I think, you know, the downside of obviously doing sort of a degree when you're a mature age student is still got to pay the bills, I suppose. So I ended up finding, like, luckily enough, sort of advertised within the university was this part-time job at this urban design and planning firm called David Locke Associates. And I thought that sounds interesting. It's sort of GIS analyst position. It sounded like a reasonably low level, but, you know, it's my first job in this kind of area. So, you know, why not? So I applied for the job and luckily enough, was able to get it. And that's when I first felt like I truly got sort of exposed to cities, I suppose, and planning and architecture and all the different things that happening there. And got to do some like sort of interesting projects around spatial analysis and land use suitability analysis and things like that. But I suppose, like, again, sort of fork in the road moment, which happened at David Locke Associates, was I got to meet my sort of co-founder now, Adam Smith, and I think sort of working together for a couple of years, we sort of realized like we had a whole bunch of common interests around technology and GIS and spatial analysis. And I think, you know, after talking together for like, you know, on and off for a few months and you know, talking over drinks and things like that, we'd sort of thought, you know, I think there's a really, like, real opportunity to sort of start a business that would sort of bring technology or better use technology to help them sort of inform urban planning and urban design process. And, you know, eventually we took the leap and sort of in 2011 we started a company that's still going, and it's called Harvest. And yeah, it was kind of built to sort of combine this people, place and technology, and, you know, really lucky enough to sort of, yeah, start a company built around those passions. So, and yeah, now the company's been going for like 7-8 years now. So it's sort of going from strength to strength, which is really exciting, and growing the team and everything. So yeah, that's sort of my background, I suppose.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I'm really keen to hear more about what your company does, but let's talk a little bit first about what kind of sparked your interest in the smart city space.
Yeah, I suppose like sort of a little bit what I just mentioned there. Sort of, I think, you know, when Adam and I started Harvest back in 2011, to be honest, we weren't that aware of the concept of smart cities. Like looking back at it now, it was obviously around, but for whatever reason, we weren't really that aware of it. We kind of, you know, were aware of, you know, urban, things like urban informatics and urban analytics, and a bunch of stuff like that. But we were just super interested. We just thought there was so much opportunity to bring to use technology within planning and more broadly cities to help make better decisions, more informed decisions based on, you know, evidence and data. And, you know, we were really interested in the idea of better engaging the community and having them contribute to the planning process and finding ways to get spatial feedback or qualitative feedback to better improve plans. And yeah, I think like that sort of curiosity and interest about improving our cities, I think is what the, you know, our company is all about and our mission. And I think that's, you know, what we're still interested in these days.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Are there any particular technologies that you've come across that you're really interested in exploring?
Yeah, I still think like one of my core interests is definitely still the geospatial technology and location intelligence work that's happening. I think like especially in the smart city space, I think, you know, cities are obviously inherently spatial, and I think all this sort of spatial data and location intelligence is definitely underpinning a lot of these smart city applications and platforms that I'm seeing. I think there's so much interesting stuff happening in this space, that, you know, whether it be like, you know, something like, you know, precision agriculture and like where people are using like LiDAR data and GPS data to, you know, better inform, you know, farming practices and helping them sort of get, you know, better crop yields and understanding those sort of things, or like even, you know, how sort of people are sort of using maps with autonomous vehicles. You know, work that companies like DeepMap are doing is super interesting, where they're basically trying to develop like super high definition, you know, maps. They're basically machines, like not even humans. They're trying to get machines to understand maps in some respect. Like that stuff is really, really super interesting. You know, even to a lesser extent, how all these different sort of mapping platforms are working with augmented reality and virtual reality to sort of bring location into those platforms. You know, whether it's like places of interest data or like real-time location data, you know, in an augmented reality sense, I think that's, you know, super fascinating for the cities and has huge applications. And, you know, even just general, you know, democratization of these location intelligence tools, which is going to like really help, I think, users and governments to perform spatial analysis and, you know, better understand, you know, what's happening within their neighborhoods and understanding sort of the dynamics of their cities. I think, you know, a lot of this work is really, really interesting and stuff that we kind of research quite often as part of our business and find ways to some, you know, we think about ways that we could potentially apply these technologies within our projects and products.
Yeah, cool. Well, that's talk about some of the things you're working on at the moment. Yeah, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, no problem. So I suppose, yeah, Harvest has kind of multiple services that we offer. The key one that we've kind of really sort of been focusing on the last few years has been around participation technology. So creating solutions that allow community to provide feedback on different projects. And we kind of have two parts of that. We build like custom kind of solutions. So one that comes to mind is we just recently built something for the City of Brimbank in Melbourne called Plan Brimbank. And it was sort of built an interactive game that sort of will help, hopefully help sort of community better understand or help government better understand priorities of the community. And what we're doing there is sort of presenting the community with these kind of different images based around these priorities, and they sort of pick the trade-off, you know, which ones do they prefer. And then based on that data, running through these different themes multiple times, hopefully there's sort of some insights that can be yielded sort of around community's priorities, whether it be like, you know, how they expect housing to be developed in their communities, or what are their priorities around transport and things like that. And that, you know, they're kind of really fun little projects that we get to do. But I suppose like one of the big things that we do as a company is we develop a community engagement platform, which we call the Hive. It's kind of a way for sort of empower governments to sort of build out their own engagement projects in-house. Like we basically give them the tools. They can kind of launch engagement projects, add feedback tools, add content, rich media, things like that. And I suppose that's what we basically do a lot of our time as a business. We basically are improving that product, constantly looking at ways that we can create better tools that can help inform communities of changes that are happening in their area, finding better ways to get feedback from the community, making sure that the data that we're getting is useful and can be analyzed and sort of actioned. So I suppose, yeah, that's what we spend most of our day doing. And you know, we have a bunch of customers who use the tool, like State Government Victoria and overseas in Canada, different cities. And yeah, it's like lots of interesting projects that these cities are doing and engaging their communities on. So
yeah, cool. So your tool that you were talking about, so obviously there's that little bit of gamification there. Yeah. I find that really interesting. Do you go out into the community, or is it all done like on a digital interface?
So it's obviously all online. So it's like a web application. But we often sort of, when we run through, we create these projects, we often talk about, you know, the council or the government's engagement strategy. And I think often want to sort of somehow marry the kind of offline and online stuff. So, you know, we often talk about these strategies, and a lot of the times, you know, the best approach is to take out, iPads into the community and run pop-ups, link these into different events or festivals that are happening and try to engage the community. But, you know, the key being to try and get them to give their feedback online using this tool in some ways, because that way you can kind of create this database that is consistent and, so I think, yeah, trying to marry that offline and online is always like kind of tricky, but I think if you can have it sort of fed into this one area, it does help with the analysis and can kind of better see those trends.
Yeah, cool. And so the other one you're talking about there is Hive.
Yep.
So is that like, so as a government agency, people engage that service so then they can then use that service to engage with the community? Is that how?
Yeah, exactly. It's that kind of, you know, software as a service model that, you know, we license out the application, all the tools, and, you know, they have, the agency in this case would have, you know, carte blanche in terms of, you know, how many projects they would launch and the tools that they would add, and, you know, it'd be very much up to them and their strategy about how they want to engage the community. But you know, we provide a lot of different tools and give them lots of different options, ways to do that, you know, things from creating different, like, sort of priorities tools around, like, participatory budgeting, so you can, like, allow the community to sort of understand government's perspective in terms of the trade-offs they have to make, being able to leave spatial feedback, being able to sort of help, like, let the community tell stories, you know, to have cute, like, sort of question and answer tools, so it's sort of a bit of a two-way dialogue happening. So it kind of, like, through the tools, give you know, government managers lots of flexibility so they can run sort of the best engagement process that they can.
Yeah, cool. Oh, that sounds really interesting. And I'm keen to kind of go on your website and have a bit of a play around. Let's talk about Australia overall. I know you're in Victoria, so let's narrow down to Victoria. And let's talk a little bit about how or where you think Victoria kind of ranks when it comes to smart cities.
Yeah. Super interesting question. I suppose if I was to just talk about my own little niche and community engagement, I actually think Australia like pretty progressive in terms of like community engagement space. I think we sort of often actually look to in terms of best practice, both in building tools and different frameworks and things. I think, you know, that's the reason why we even work in North America and is because they kind of look to Australia and say, you know, what are these guys doing?
Cool.
So that, I think that's, you know, in terms of the community engagement space, I think we actually are kind of ranked pretty high. If I kind of pull out to like whole smart cities sort of industry, I don't know where Australia ranks. I know there's like a lot of obviously buzz and talk and there's lots of interesting research happening in this country. And I think, you know, in terms of that, it looks like we're doing a good job. I think I sort of struggle with this idea of like, you know, a sort of ranking around smart cities. I don't know if that's the best way or the best prism that we should be looking through or evaluating ourselves. I suppose, you know, you see these different smart city rankings come out, you know, and it says, you know, different cities, you know, these are the top 10 smart cities in the world. And I sometimes cringe at those rankings. I think kind of missing the mark a little bit. I think people probably acknowledge they're like inherently biased towards, you know, large cities and cities that have large economies that can afford solutions. But, the thing that this is my personal opinion, but I feel like we should be, you know, just thinking about ranking cities in terms of, you know, quality of life and sustainability and resilience and then in some ways, finding a way to correlate that to the sort of smart cities work that we're doing and sort of seeing, you know, are the applications that we're sort of introducing to our cities like marrying up to these quality of life rankings? Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I really enjoy that answer, actually. Because I ask this question. I ask this question because I think gets you thinking about, okay, well, if I were to rank something in the smart city space, how would I actually do that? Because there are so many different aspects to it. It's exactly what you just described there.
Because it's kind of like you see, you know. I don't want to pick on a particular city, but you see like San Francisco, it's ranked really like really high in terms of its, you know, smart city ranking or whatever. But then you hear all these stories about, you know, homelessness issues and you know, cost of living and affordability and congestion. And I kind of wonder, like, is that really the best example of a city? So I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I definitely I hear what you're saying. And, yeah, I think it's a really good conversation that we need, that overall, like, we need to have, that we're not actually trying to aim for some kind of, oh, well, now we're on the smart cities map. I mean, that might be useful in some aspects. So then you get some attention and some funds and that kind of thing. But fundamentally, what is the point of the smart city? Well, it's supposed to, you know, make it more livable, accessible and sustainable for everyone involved. And I think, if just because you rank high on a smart city scale, does that mean that your community is engaged? It might mean that because that's might be how that fed into that. But it kind of, unless we're ranking or thinking about that livability factor, a smart city ranking might not be useful at all.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's not a bad exercise to go rank smart cities, but yeah, unless you're correlating those back to, you know, livability or whatever, it's kind of pointless to sort of stand on its own.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think that's the thing. It depends how it's done and who's doing it and where those biases come in. Yeah, for sure. So no, thanks. That was a great answer. Let's talk a little bit about some of the places that they're piloting smart technology. So where do you think are good places or cities or you know, you can name a place or a type of place or whatever to pilot this smart tech?
Yeah, I think, you know, with a lot of these questions, I feel like it sort of depends. I think with all of these kind of solutions and things that we're coming up with, I think obviously the first question you need to ask is like what sort of problem I'm trying to solve, and then I think based on that would probably determine where you're going to pilot, like, you know, the smart city technology. I think, you know, if you're a random example, if you're trying to build a mobility solution or something like that, you know, you want to pilot that in an area where you're actually going to get appropriate feedback. There's no point in going and testing that in, you know, a rural community that doesn't have a mobility issue. You want to test that in an area that, you know, has a mobility issue that you're trying to solve. But if you think about, you know, I had like a general purpose sort of smart city technology, I think you always want to test this stuff in, you know, an area that has a diverse community. I don't think, you know, you'll never understand like the impact that you're going to have by introducing the technology unless you get a really good cross section of the population, you know, whether it be like different ages and ethnicities or religious backgrounds or you know, different geographies. You know, geography of a city could have, you know, a huge impact on technology that you're going to introduce. But I think that's really important. I think probably the most important thing I would say when piloting smart city technology is probably the best idea is not to test them on greenfield sites in some respects. Like, it obviously depends on the technology, but I don't quite get why we would like build a whole new city to test like a smart city technology. Like, I feel like that's not, it's kind of like it has like an underappreciation of what our cities actually are and what their makeup is. You know, if you really want to if your whole goal is to kind of improve the places that you live in, like you sort of talked about, by introducing some smart city technology, I think you're going to want to at some point introduce that into an actual place. And like, we understand places are complex and there's all these different sort of histories and communities have the different ways that they sort of have evolved over the years. And, you know, we have all this different infrastructure, which could be, you know, really hard to deal with. It's unmaintained or old or whatever. So I don't know. I just sort of have this feeling that, if we do test this stuff, we kind of want to test these individual places as much as possible.
No, that's a really interesting point and one I hadn't really thought about before, but I was just thinking that I've been talking about Songdo in South Korea because I went there when I was in South Korea. And I had a conversation early on in the podcast with Nancy Odendahl, and I remember her mentioning Songdo, and I don't really remember what I said about Songdo at the time. I probably said, oh, yeah, that's a cool smart city or whatever. But then when I actually thought about it, I went, well, is it really? Because when I went there, yeah, there was some cool tech and whatever, and you saw a big flashy screen and all that stuff, but there was no one there, right?
Yeah.
I was like,
and like, just me. Like a reasonably small population from memory, it's like only maybe aiming for like a couple of 100,000 people or something.
And I couldn't even hazard a guess at how many people were there, but it definitely didn't feel like South Korea because I'd spent a lot of time in Seoul, and then it was like, oh yeah, this is South Korea's smart city, but actually Seoul is the smart city. I felt like it was when I was there. I didn't know much about smart cities at the time, but now I think back and yeah, Seoul definitely felt like it was smart. Like I could get around. It was accessible. It was safe. It was, what's the word? Like livable, I suppose, if that's what you're looking for, because I also felt like it needed more green space and all those type of things. So yeah, you know, pros and cons, of course. and coming from an Australian background, you know, we're spoilt for green space. But yeah, so I really like that, thinking about integrating into the communities we already have rather than just trying to make these, you know, smart communities that don't actually exist and that we want to draw people to. It's interesting. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it kind of obviously depends on the technology. Like, you don't want to start up with autonomous cars like in the middle of the streets of Melbourne, but it's at some point, you know, you have to test these things within like actual places that we live.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Let's talk a little bit about integration. So, have you got any ideas about how we can better integrate across, you know, the different disciplines, governments, and industries?
I think there's lots of like research around you know, like how do you know better solutions and how you integrate. And I think, you know, a lot of people talk about, you know, sort of methods for doing that. You know, you want to build cross-functional teams, diverse teams, you know, to help solve problems, and that way you can better like integrate and get a bit better perspectives about all these different disciplines, you know, sort of more empathy for, you know, what one discipline is trying to do versus another discipline, things like that. But I think, you know, if you think about sort of where I work a lot of these days, like my sense is, you know, not going to be able to ever sort of integrate across government or community or vendors, you know, across these disciplines until we, like, I suppose, really break down these data silos that would exist. You know, would be vendors holding data. Obviously, lots of different government departments would be holding their own data. Until we like sort of break down those silos and find ways to better like share that information, have more transparency about data, and like find ways to further democratize the tools to be able to use that data effectively. Like, it seems like we. Like that integration piece is gonna be hard. When I think about like what would be like ideal platform, like city platform that all these disciplines like within government or, you know, vendors or the community could use, it seems like maybe a little bit silly, but I kind of always think about the Google Knowledge Graph. Do you know what I'm talking about with it, when I say the Google Knowledge Graph?
No, explain.
Like, so I think everyone would be aware of it. This probably doesn't, I don't know what it's called, but you know how you go to Google, you type in a search term, like, for example, like Flinders Street Station, and then up on the right hand side, if you're on the desktop, you see this little panel, and it will say, like, you know, Flinders Street Station, here's the map, here's some photos, here's Street View, here's some history, I don't know, here's some reviews of the thing, here's the train timetable, things like that. Like, I always imagine some sort of platform that, you know, it'd be really cool if we could do that like for cities. So you can kind of type in, you know, like you're a landscape architect, you want to type in, you know, you're going to do a master plan, this new park, you type in the name of the park into this platform, and suddenly you get all this information. So you can see, here's what, you know, these other disciplines have been doing. Like, here's the service requests, by the maintenance guys. Here's the, you know, results of the community engagement strategy from the water strategy that was done. Cool. I can see what people said about that. I can see the development planning applications around here and why things were like not approved or approved. Suddenly I think you get a really good appreciation for what all these different disciplines are doing. And, the community had access to tools like that as well as like government. I think it would be like really radical in terms of like information sharing and understanding of places. And yeah, that's obviously a very technological solution, but it's just something that I always like to sort of think about.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really good point. Like, sometimes integration comes down to, I mean, it's not simple, but the concept is simple, that we can share data openly and transparently across the different areas, and that we can kind of, break down those traditional barriers that exist, that, you know, I have to think like this because I'm the government, you think like that because you're, you know, in academia or something like that.
Yeah.
But then sharing data, so then we're just making decisions based on evidence and data rather than all coming in with our individual vetted interests.
Well, yeah, to some extent, but I think just like if you give and share this data amongst disciplines and like you said, and the community and government, I think like, you can also find ways where you can see, oh, actually, this data is incorrect, or, you know, might give, like, an opportunity for the community to add context to this data, through their own way, or they can, see that, you know, this is how decision made, and actually, that decision was biased, and here's why, and I don't know, until you sort of get to that point, like, it's not so much about, like, having the data as this kind of fact-based situation, but just sharing it and allow people to interrogate it and they can draw their own insights. I think that's sort of super powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. So let's talk a little bit about emerging trends. And the ones I want to talk about are the ones that people aren't talking about openly. So do you have any ideas on emerging trends that people aren't talking about?
I suppose on that same sort of track that we're just maybe talking about, like, I think, you know, there's a lot of talk about, like, big data. And I think, you know, rightfully so, like, I think the amount of data that we're going to generate is going to be huge, in cities in the future. I think if you'd asked me this question a few years ago, I probably would have said, you know, you need to think about, you know, re-putting citizens back as the focus. I reckon based on sort of my read of the situation is, I think people are doing that. But I think maybe what's missing as part of that conversation is you probably still sort of, I don't know, there's still a bit of a lacking of engagement with citizens about smart cities and how they want to shape the policies around smart cities. And, I think this links to big data in terms of, you sort of, I think maybe don't fully understand what it means with big data. I think, you know, to get to a situation with big data, there's like lots of cleansing that's been done. You know, context has been probably somewhat stripped out, in some of the meaning. And I think, you know, I've read some really interesting articles. Kind of, there's probably one recently, like, it was in a conversation that was about, like, thinking about big data and thick data. They're telling, like, thick data about, like, more qualitative information. So information that's been either done from, like, ethnographic studies or somehow where you've imbued the stories of the community, or collected the stories of the community. And that way you can sort of help qualify the results that you're getting from the data insights with these stories and kind of bring more context and social meaning to big data. I think that's, probably something that we're not thinking about or talking enough about.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, no, it's an interesting one to think about, I guess. And, data and community engagement and how those two kind of really intertwine, and how we can better incorporate those two things together as well.
I think, like, you know, when you think about, like, cities and what makes cities so unique, I think it's actually kind of some of the informal stuff and you know, it's really about the people and their histories and the stories and these communities and things like that. And I think big data is really important because that can help us, you know, really yield these insights that we would never, be humanly possible. But at the same time, you know, you don't want to miss those kind of, miss that social meaning or, you know, there might be something that's, you know, being missed, like, that you don't know, like the sensor wasn't configured properly and it's reporting something as being fine, but it's actually not. You know, you need to be able to correlate that stuff with, you know, the people on the ground and what they say and things like that. So
yeah, definitely. Well, cool. Well, it's been so great to talk to you this evening, Brian. And I really like the perspective that you've brought, which is combining that big data with the community engagement side of things. Because, I mean, I've talked to a lot of people about that human-centric approach, but I think you've brought in this kind of tool that you know, you've developed and that's, you know, going strong, which is about exactly that and that engagement and how we can use that in a smart city. So it kind of brings that really tangible and practical approach to that. So yeah, thanks so much.
Yeah, not a problem. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. Well, I only have one last question for you, which is, how can people connect with you?
I think, like, the obvious ones, I think, LinkedIn's always a good one to connect with me, and also, probably via our company website, which is harvestdp.com. can probably find my details.
Yeah, well, I'll put all the links and everything in the show notes so people can click and find you and connect with you.
Yeah, great. Thanks.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Brian, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good.
It's the Smart City Podcast. Whoa.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart City Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes can be found at thesmartcitypodcast.com. If you have any questions or comments for me or any of my guests, connect with me via email, zoe@thesmartcitypodcast.com, or via the socials. I'm on Twitter and Facebook at Smart City Pod. As always, I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.